That'll wake you up. Good music. Chick, Chick, Chick is the name of the group. Their music is going to be performed at the O Positive Festival in Kingston, and we're going to be hearing from other musical acts performing at O Positive Kingston, and then later on in the show, we'll have the folks from O Positive Kingston in to tell us about their big event coming up this weekend. Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable. It's the 9th of October. Hopefully you have had a lovely morning so far, and we're going to do our best not to screw it up. We hope that you will join us. All you have to do to get in on the conversation is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Quickly, before I'll mention that Alan is off today because of Yom Kippur, and so we also want to mention that we've been doing very well in the lockbox, but we can still continue to do more as we try to fill it and get to more than $500,000 before the start of the fund drive, which is just a week and a half away on October 21st. We are at $322,822, which means we have $177 to go in the lockbox. We still have tickets for the Capitol Steps. More than half are gone. So if you want to go to this, time is fleeting, and it is something. It's always sold out. It's our sixth annual event, as I mentioned, and every year it's sold out. So there's no reason to believe that it won't sell out this year. So if you want your tickets, you can get a pair of tickets for $150, 1-800-323-9262, or you can do it online at wamc.org. All right, let me get to introducing everyone, and then we'll get into the conversation here. And there is, as always, a lot to talk about. Times Union columnist Chris Churchill joins us. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Great, great.
Good morning to you. Very nice to have you here, as always. We also welcome investigative journalist Rosemary R. Mayo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
SUNY New Paltz communications professor and former New York State Senator Terry Gibson. Hello, sir.
Hello. Good morning. Happy to be here.
Wonderful to have you here. And Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany, Bob Griffin. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Joe. Just wishing everybody a blessed Yom Kippur, and our thoughts go out to the people in Germany that are affected by that attack.
Yes. Very, very tragic. And we will probably get to that this morning. There are other things to talk about in the right off the bat, though, and the big story, of course, is the announcement late yesterday. I don't think it came as any major surprise, but President Trump's lawyer said in a letter to House leaders that the executive branch would not participate in the investigation. The letter came hours after the White House blocked the interview of a key witness, the diplomat Gordon Sondland, before he was to appear on Capitol Hill. According to reporting in the New York Times, Mr. Sondland was on a special mission, quote-unquote, by President Trump to Ukraine. So what was that all about? Obviously, those were some of the questions that were going to be asked. Now the Trump White House has declared war on the House impeachment inquiry. Your unprecedented actions have left the president with no choice, said the letter signed by the White House counsel. In order to fulfill his duties to the American people, the Constitution, the executive branch, and all future occupants of the office of the presidency, President Trump as an administration cannot participate in your partisan and unconstitutional inquiry under these circumstances. But in refusing to cooperate with what Mr. Trump on Tuesday called a kangaroo court, and one House member believed was actually overseen by Captain Kangaroo, true story.
Unbelievable, yes.
The president risked ensuring the very outcome that he would rather avoid. House Democrats made clear that his failure to comply with their demands for information could form the basis for its own article of impeachment, and that, of course, would be obstruction of justice. My question, I know perhaps is rhetorical, but I will ask it as my first question to the panel at large. What could possibly be seen as unconstitutional in the inquiry that the House has started here?
I think lawyers are shaking their heads over that. If this is held up by courts, it means no president can ever be impeached unless it's by his or her own party. By his own party. there's nothing kangaroo about this. And they're also making a big deal about the fact that there's not been a formal impeachment vote, as there had been in the last the previous few impeachment attempts. But there's, again, nothing in the Constitution that requires that.
Well, they're just reaching for straws. They clearly do not want to participate, and they are not going to participate, in my opinion, no matter what is done. And so anything they can do to justify their actions, they're going to do. And that includes just blatantly misinterpreting the Constitution, which clearly gives the House the right to proceed as they are proceeding.
Yeah, and it to me, it sort of lays bare the inequality of our system. If you study Trump's background, he's had a history of hiding behind law, of lawsuits that I would consider to be frivolous, of using his attorneys as attacking other people. One correction, though, because I keep hearing it, it's the House Democrats. It's not. It's Congress. These processes are a congressional action that is written into the Constitution. It's part of our balance of powers. So this idea that he can get away with, you know, this idea of turning it into it's just the House Democrats. No, it's really not. And you can't have it both ways. You know,
but that's one of the reasons there probably should have been a vote, though, right? So that you could say this was an act of Congress. And I'm not trying to justify his stonewalling based on that part of it. But I do think there should have been a vote so that you could say, yes, this is an act of Congress.
Yeah, Chris, I'm in complete agreement. And I actually think the Speaker should bring it to a vote, because we should know how members of the House of Congress vote on this. They should be on the record of whether they want to and will support an inquiry.
Why does he want it? Why is he asking for it?
He's not. He's just using it as a thin, in my mind, and as a thin thread to be able to defend his not participating.
I think they might want some people on the record and people in difficult swing districts. You know, I mean, that would be the only reason I could think of that he might want to see a vote.
Yeah, I agree.
I think he's grasping at straws.
Well, it's both. Yeah, I mean, one doesn't exclude the other. And I think actually Pelosi is proceeding in a way that is closer to the Constitution than we've seen previously. The Constitution says the Congress, the House, has the right to investigate. That's purely what she's doing. She's not ready for an impeachment vote, and she wants to bring over more Republicans so that it is a bipartisan indictment, if you will. And that requires, and she is betting on, more information coming out that will persuade others. Why is that such a bad thing? Why do we have to be on the record right now?
And she wants to make sure that she has all the facts and all the information that the investigation will yield, hopefully, and then ask them to take a vote. Asking them to take a vote before they have all the information is what she's trying to avoid. And I think she's smart to do that. Of course the Republicans want them to take a vote. Of course they want to get them on record.
That vote could be difficult for – sorry to interrupt. That vote could be difficult for Republicans, too. I mean, some of them will also have to answer to voters in swing districts. And, you know, it puts some Democrats on the spot, but it would also put some Republicans on the spot.
It's true, but they are in the minority, and their chances of taking back the House are pretty slim anyway. So, it's a valid point. But I do think, in terms of what Donald Trump is thinking, I don't think it matters whether they take a vote, don't take a vote, they subpoena, don't subpoena. He is not going to cooperate. He is not going to give them what they want. He is going to find every possible way to stonewall it, delay, deny. I don't think the practicalities or the law or the Constitution or armed guards knocking on his door will make a difference.
No, but this sort of gets to the heart of the inequality that I started with. If you're called into court and you just send a letter to the judge saying, no, I'm not showing up, I don't think that, you know, that you're a kangaroo court, guess what's going to happen? You're going to get, you know, they're going to send the sheriffs or the marshals to your door, and you are going to show up in court.
Unless you're the president of the United States.
Well, but it's not. Apparently. But I also think this is endemic to the way that Donald Trump has lived his life. And again, this really gets to me a core issue of inequality of power and money. It really shakes the belief in the entire American system when you can have someone just thumb their nose at basic, you know, at sort of basic building block of what we are as a people.
He's been doing that since the day he was elected.
It's astounding that through his whole life, he has never paid a consequence for a bad decision or action. Not bad marriages, not bad business decisions, not horrible politics. He has never paid a price. And I don't mind that he's... sorry, my phone is beeping at me.
No, that's all right. We're all going through this because we just got the new updates.
New noises I had never heard before. So I apologize. I don't stop him from using. He has the money, and he's paying for good lawyers to do very creative and fancy footwork. But it isn't working, at least in the court so far. The judges who have looked at their briefs seem to be horrified at the kind of claims they're making that he's above the law.
Well, it's the court of public opinion that we're really trying this
exactly.
in right now.
Exactly, he's playing this in politics.
And the letter from the lawyer, just like the letter from Bill Barr about the Mueller report, are done in a very strategic way to try to take control of the message, to try to change the narrative, and to try to win in the court of public opinion, and to try to get the court of public opinion to start saying things like it is a partisan attack, it is a kangaroo court. Even though all these things are not true, even though this isn't a court, there's nothing happening here that's a court. This is an impeachment process. It's completely separate from what you would find in a court of law.
Right. That's another thing. The public, and I'm included in this, I keep reading, trying to catch up, has confused what's happening in the House right now with what we see on Law and Order. You know, like confront your accuser. It's more actually like a grand jury indictment, a grand jury proceeding, which is the prosecution figuring out what they have and looking at the evidence.
The trial would take place in the Senate.
Exactly. Right. But listen, it is very effective. And you hear Lindsey Graham saying it. You hear they must know. If I could look it up, they could, too. But they're saying, he gets to confront the whistleblower. No, he doesn't.
Of course they know. Remember, this is the same party, the Republican Party, that did exactly this back during the Merrick Garland trials, back when they came up with talking points to convince the American people that everything they were doing was constitutional, even though it was not constitutional.
Correct.
They were supposed to hold a hearing, and they managed to not do that.
In the same way that the Republicans rail against the Democrats, saying that you're just trying to overturn the election of 2016, what Trump is doing is that he's trying to overturn the election of 2018. Okay, and to me, this is exactly what the system was intended to do, that the voters have the opportunity to create counterbalances so that you don't see the rise of a despot in the presidency. The system in a very strange way is working exactly as I think the founders intended. This piece, though, of a president basically saying, "No, I'm not going to follow the Constitution. I'm not going to follow the law," I think goes beyond and puts us in a very different constitutional crisis. And I would argue even worse than the Nixonian crisis that we saw after Watergate.
Do you see that the Democrats are acting that way? It seems to me they have no response to this absolute stonewalling. They're sitting here saying, it's shocking, just like we are. But what's their next step?
Well,
you
ask saying,
them that, and they go, we have many measures
court.
Possible.
I mean, they're saying take it to court. And they're also correct. And they also are saying that this could be another article of impeachment.
Okay, but they haven't gone to court. And that worries me because of Merrick Garland. Yeah. Why
I agree
that
with
never
you.
Taken to court?
I think they will go to court, but they understand that the court process is going to be long and lengthy, and they had obviously hoped to wrap this up in a much more timely manner, which I don't think is going to happen. I think this is going to drag on for a long time, whether it goes to court or not, because they're never going to get from Trump what they want and what they need, or from his people. They're never going to provide it. So they may end up going through the impeachment process and vote to impeach, and then it moves to the Senate, and we see what happens there.
Well, and that goes to the kind of the competing aims. I mean, we talked last week a little bit about how Trump would like to drag this out, and the House would like to get this done quickly, because the closer it gets to an election, the less legitimate it seems, right?
Right.
I mean, if they're voting on impeachment on October 25th, that's going to look a little bizarre to a lot of people. So, you know, going to the courts obviously takes – takes a lot of time.
I don't understand why you can't do both. Why not bring articles of impeachment, have your vote, your impeachment vote, but you're also going to the court saying there he is totally nullifying the idea of congressional oversight. That's got to be unconstitutional.
I think as the subpoenas are not responded to, I think they will do that. I think that's the only other recourse they have, because what else is there? I mean, they can't, you know, send the military in there and arrest him. I mean, there doesn't seem to be anything that they can do short of going to court.
And, no, but there are other mechanisms, and I actually think that it's time to up the heat. So for those people who hold professional licenses, including the attorneys, I think that they should be going to seek debarment for not following the law. I think they really need to take the gloves off on this.
Yeah. Well, there's precedent. I mean, Eric Holder was held in contempt.
He was.
Right. I mean, which also goes to show that this is not the first time that a White House has stonewalled an investigation. But, you know, they could hold somebody in contempt. They could hold Barr in contempt. I mean,
Corey Lewandowski in contempt. My God. Yeah, I mean, was contemptuous.
How meaningful those steps are is, you know, I guess open for debate.
Well, I was just going to ask that. How meaningful is something like that if you do it? I mean, is it symbolic or does it really
They threatened criminal charges against Holder. So, I mean, you can take it to a next step if you want to.
I don't know how much the American public sort of digests this and makes sense of it. I mean, what you are seeing right now is that Trump still is controlling the message in a way that seems to be very effective with at least enough of the American voting population to still give him an edge. He is playing the victim.
How do you mean by that?
Well, he's playing the victim. You know, he's so good at playing the victim. It's, you know, they're picking on me. I can't call witnesses. I don't get to question and bring in my own evidence. You know, he's just so good
at
playing.
It's not catered.
Yeah, right. It's not catered.
It's presidential.
I have no power here. I'm the president. What do you mean? I'm the president? I can't go into this kangaroo court and you know, do what I want to do.
Well, what's the evidence that he's winning that argument?
Bunny rabbit, moose.
Well, I think, you know, we are seeing the polls shift to having more people support the idea of impeachment, but it still hasn't shifted enough to where the majority of the American voters are against
it. I think the public is always going to be really skeptical about impeachment by and large. I mean, you're basically asking the public to support overturning their own vote, right? So it's always going to be on the impeachers to kind of make that argument and convince people.
Yeah, but
you're right that so far
they haven't. What if you make a really compelling case?
And it still doesn't convince people
that
it wasn't
I don't, you know.
I also think it's another one of the side effects of Trump's constantly delaying in all these different legal actions. Because,
10 seconds.
Because 10 seconds. Because it looks like they really are going after him. There's people coming in all different directions.
Yep. Well, it just keeps the chaos
mushes
going.
The whole thing up.
All right, we're going to take a break.
That's
all right. And we'll be back and we'll continue. WAMC.org to help out the lockbox. WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Lady Moon and the Eclipse. You were right, Rosemary. You called it. Good job for you. It's the Lady Moon and the Eclipse playing at the O Positive Festival in Kingston, New York this weekend, and we'll learn more about the festival later on in the show. You can see our entire playlist today and every day by going to WAMC.org/roundtable. Don't forget the lockbox, WAMC.org. We have tickets for Capital Steps, $150 a pair. Those are going very quickly. If you want in, now's the time. 1-800-323-9262, WAMC.org. The event is Friday, the 1st of November. Friday, the 1st of November at The Egg in Albany. 1-800-323-9262. Pair of tickets for a pledge of $150. The sixth time we've done this, and it's always been a sellout, and we don't expect this year to be any different. All right, let us go to some letters, why don't we? We have a few, and we'll get started. We check in with Neil, who says, can the House send U.S. Marshals to arrest witnesses who refuse to testify or produce subpoenaed evidence? No,
I don't think. I don't believe it would be the U.S. Marshals anyway. I mean, maybe the Capitol Police. Congress has their own police department. The Marshals
are sergeant at arms.
Marshals are part of the executive branch. There was a point in time when if I'm correct, there was actually a holding cell in Congress.
I don't know if it still exists or not.
It's a very good question that we really should get the specific answer to. But I think if the answer is yes, that they can send anyone in to make an arrest, we have to consider that's there's a lot of risks that come with that, I think, for the House to actually physically incarcerate someone.
You think?
You know, I think they have to really think about that.
You're saying that's a lot, right?
Well, I mean, even though I would certainly like to see many of these people put behind bars, I think it in many ways will just feed into the narrative that Republicans are formulating, which is it's all
victimhood.
About making us, you know, all about partisan attacks.
Roscoe says, don't use the word participate. I noticed the word use in the New York Times today also. President Trump's lawyer said the executive branch would not participate in the investigation. Well, that is, Roscoe, I understand your point, which I'll get to in a second, but that is the phrase that was used in the letter that was sent from the White House counsel to
the crazy letter
to the House. Five-page letter, and I urge you to read it.
Someone called it a lawyer temper tantrum.
So but
if you think about the letter, it is speaking to the way Trump likes to operate. So his attorneys are doing exactly what he is telling him to do.
It's also important to point out that the Constitution doesn't require that the executive branch participate. This is a process that is supposed to happen in the House.
Well,
they
can
do what they want to do.
That was Roscoe's point.
And that's Roscoe's point, that it's not, this isn't something you participate in, you cooperate.
It happens with or without you.
Right, exactly. You don't have that option not to... Right. Yeah, I have decided not to participate in paying my taxes.
Right.
Yes.
Doesn't work that way, does it? We are hearing news, by the way, that the Turkish president says the attack in Syria has begun. This was something that was feared as a result of the president's action. Earlier this week, and was talked about and with great concern from members of his own party, even the people who have been defending him on impeachment, that really did speak out on this particular issue.
Joe, this is really bad. I mean, this really angers me. I mean, for one, if you look at Turkey's history, I mean, they have a history of repression and savagery that we can't ignore. It also leads me to really question who would ally themselves with us if they think that the United States isn't going to stand by them? I mean, we're walking away from one of our staunchest allies in the Middle East and leaving them to, you know, frankly, a despot in Turkey, which gets to, I think, another point is that, again, this is Trump's affinity for dictators and despots over our own allies.
Yep.
And the blood of the Kurds is on his hands. We as a people are going to pay the price for it, but it is on his hands. He could have stopped this. If he didn't pull the troops out and if he had taken a hard position with Turkey, they wouldn't have rolled. He gave in to them.
This could be awful.
It is awful. It's already awful. Yeah. I mean, the first, if one person dies because of this, it's awful. It just goes to show how attracted he is to this dictator mindset, and he wants to be a part of that. He literally walked away from this so that this semi-dictator could actually just do what he wanted without American interference, and it really upsets me too. And it's not the American people walking away. Let's be clear on that. This is Donald Trump walking away. This is Donald Trump as president not listening to any advisors, not listening to the people that do this type of thing for a living and just doing what he wants to do.
Let me just read. This is from the New York Times that just came over about a minute ago. Turkey launched a planned military incursion in northeastern Syria on Wednesday aimed at flushing out a Syrian militia backed by the United States. This, according to President Erdogan, writing on Twitter, Mr. Erdogan said the operation aimed to prevent the creation of a terror corridor across our southern border, but provided no other information about where Turkish forces had entered Syria or how far they would go. Earlier Wednesday, a Syrian militia backed by the United States had mobilized its forces and warned of a humanitarian catastrophe as Turkey massed troops near the country's border for an incursion, it said, that would begin shortly, and we now learn has indeed begun. My question is a twofold one, and Bob, I'll start with you on this. You talk about how the concern with our allies, and I understand that, and certainly due to this stance. But there's also the concern of the back and forth and the shakiness just of making a decision, right? I mean, you go forward, you walk it back. You go forward, you walk it back. You go forward, you walk it back. And now you go forward, you walk it back, and then action is taken. That, to me, is scary as well.
Yeah, because there's nobody can count on U.S. foreign policy right now, which leaves everybody, you know, questioning how strong the support of the United States is, which creates a vacuum that others are filling. You know, even worse to me though, Joe, is the news out of Washington that this move caught the military by surprise. That this was a knee-jerk reaction on the part of a man who has no military training. Remember, he had bone spurs, so he couldn't serve. And he did it in a way that basically circumvented all of the best military thinkers that we have. And not only that, he did it in a way that left the Kurds with no time to prepare. I mean, again, when I say I can't say it strongly enough that the way he and Erdogan acted was you know they conspired against the Kurds. And if I was a Kurd right now, I would feel nothing but betrayed by Trump, but also by the American people. You know, the other point of it that I think gets to the question you're asking, Joe. I hear this and I think, okay, Trump, what did you get out of this? What did you get out of making this concession to Turkey? And then I ask a second question, what did the U.S. get out of this? Because I don't think the 2 points are the same anymore.
Worse than that, I think that while this is a huge betrayal and it's not honorable behavior that the United States has usually shown towards allies, it's dangerous to the U.S. ISIS, despite Trump's lies to the contrary, is not defeated. And now the Kurds are not going to help us over there. And they were the boots on the ground in our first crushing of them, pushing them out of Syria and out of parts of Iraq. That's gone now. So there is a direct danger to the United States and to all the troops that he's being so holy about pulling out. No, he has not protected them.
Well, and I hope that the pulling out of our troops wasn't his way of showing that he's in control because of the whole impeachment discussion.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, exactly what it is. It is his way of showing that he can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, and that nobody will stand up to him. And it's also his way of getting his ego stroked. A lot of this is just about being able to say, oh, well, Erdogan, he likes me. I did this for Erdogan. He and I are buds. I'll do whatever he wants. Just like with Putin, just like with the North Korean leader, he loves to be respected by these dictators.
He loves to have his, to use a kind of a crude term, his hiney kissed, right? I mean, if he has a charming, enjoyable phone call with somebody, he will do, despite himself supposedly being the master of the deal and the hard negotiator, he caves every time somebody charms him.
Well, and
it's
that's
really
the,
remarkable.
Let us not forget his grandiose claim that he has unmatched intelligence. And,
infinite
was another perfect phone
infinite
call with
wisdom.
Erdogan.
Yeah. And so,
very
yeah,
very stable genius.
Yeah, I mean, I think there can we say that this it's like a mental illness.
The great deal makers' way of making deals is essentially just walking away from taking any responsibility for anything. That's the way he goes about making these deals, which are non-deals. They're chaos. I mean, he has just created chaos. And the entire Republican Party seems to be completely willing to sit there and just watch it happen.
Well, not in this case, though, right? I mean, when the Syria thing, there was widespread condemnation of it.
Yeah. Widespread condemnation.
Well, that's something. I mean, you know.
What has it done? What has it done? It's done nothing. I mean, it doesn't stop it. It hasn't changed it. It hasn't reversed it. Nothing comes of it. They just want to get on the record of seeming to be on the opposing side. But yeah, nothing really comes of it.
I'm with you because, you know, it reminds me of prairie dogs. They pop their little heads up and they chirp. Boop, 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 boop. No, you can't do this. And they pop right back down. Yeah. They're not standing up to him. Mm-hmm. I mean, if McConnell wanted to, he would take the leadership of the Senate over. They would go meet with the president of the White House and say, this isn't acceptable.
Exactly.
Okay. And I don't see that.
Let the record show, though, that in this case and with this example, I like prairie dogs.
They are cuter.
Yes,
they're cuter than they like whack-a-mole. Like, like maybe a whack-a-mole thing. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, but then I figured PETA would call. I mean, so I apologize. Anybody out there who's fans of prairie dogs, I did not mean to equate prairie
lay
dogs
the prairie
with the GOP
dogs.
Senators.
Yeah, they're very
so please
cute.
Don't send a letter saying tell Griffin keep Griffin off the air because he insulted prairie dogs.
Oh, if we
not only that you talked about whacking them.
No, no, that was Joe. No, for the record, that was Joe,
which is just a harmless carnival game after all. By the way, if we kept every panelist that our listeners told us to throw off the air, I'd be here all by myself. So,
hate to break it to you, Joe. No, you wouldn't.
You make an excellent point. We'll take a break. We'll take a census of who makes it through the break and who doesn't, and we'll be right back. Under the sun, there's nothing new, but she keeps it one on. She's a breakthrough. It's cold out there. That's nothing new. But she keeps it warm. David Longstreth, who is going to be playing at the O Positive Festival in Kingston. We'll learn more about the festival coming up later on in our program, our playlist, online at wamc.org/roundtable. And we welcome your letters. We have several. We'll go to those. Panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We go to Mike. I was scratching my head and hearing that the White House counsel's rationale for impeachment inquiring was unconstitutional. The letter bemoans the fact that the president isn't allowed to cross-examine the witnesses against him. It is my understanding that impeachment is akin to a grand jury proceeding. I don't believe that the accused has the right to cross-examine a witness in a grand jury proceeding. That right, quote-unquote, all caps in this case, is reserved for the actual trial. I wonder where the White House lawyers got their legal training to come up with that concept. Would hate to see their law school grades.
Trump University, probably.
Well, let's just be clear. They got that training in a communication class where they understood the power of words, and they're trying very hard to change the narrative for the president. They understand what the law is. This isn't lawyers that don't know how to read the Constitution. This is done on purpose.
Yeah, he himself is trying to change the meaning of the word corruption,
right?
Which I think Rachel Maddow did a whole thing on that, just as he did with fake news. That's not fake news now is anything he doesn't agree with that doesn't like him. It's not what fake news is.
Well, and we can even say the same thing about impeachment. Impeachment is
exactly
something
that's a kangaroo court
of whoever doesn't agree with him is
right.
Should be impeached.
Which, if you look at it, any grand jury is a kangaroo court. It's set up for the prosecution. It is.
Right.
It's not time for the defense to step in yet. So, in a way, as all good lies, there's some element of truth in it that makes it very believable.
Mark says it's not important that the Republicans have been shut out of calling witnesses unlike previous. Let me rephrase this. Mark, as a question, asks, is it not important that the Republicans have been shut out of calling witnesses unlike previous impeachment inquiries?
I believe that's not really true. Those are trials before, and the special prosecutor handled the Clinton impeachment, and there was one witness, and it was the special prosecutor was Ken Starr, who was interviewed. They want to bring in Hunter Biden. They want a parallel investigation. And if you allow them, if Nancy Pelosi were so dumb, which she is not, to open this up right now, you'd have Hunter Biden and Joe Biden in there being asked questions, being grilled by the Trey Gowdy's of the present time.
Well, you know, you raised Trey Gowdy, and I just want to remind everybody that Hillary Clinton didn't hide behind an attorney letter. She actually ended up in front of the committee, and if I remember, it was like for 11 or 12 hours. I mean, it was 9 hours.
It
only felt like 12, I'm sure. But it's I mean it's a it it, it it's a it, It's a stark example to what we're seeing, okay?
Right. You know, that's a really good point. Why did they stop the ambassador from – the EU ambassador from testifying yesterday? All the TV analysts that I – the lawyer analysts were saying, if you have a witness who will exonerate you, if he could have come in and said, you have this all wrong – they would have put him on.
He can't.
That's the difference between Hillary, who really didn't do anything wrong, actually, and what we have now. He's hiding.
Oh, well, it's not only that. I don't think we've seen the bottom of the cesspool yet. I think this is we're still plummeting to the bottom, and these are just ways of trying to throw breaks in it.
I think they understand the power of consistency. If they let one person go in and testify, then they open the door to others. And as long as they're going to stonewall, the best way to stonewall is to really stonewall. You let nothing come through.
All right, Beck.
You're right about that. Mm-hmm.
We go back to letters and go to Oliver, who says, given the current disturbing statements out of the White House, I am terrified. I have no doubt President Trump would instigate and welcome civil war if it buys him more time in office. And unfortunately, I feel many reactionary Americans would go violent on his behalf. We then take in this letter from Jill, who says, why isn't it against the law for elected officials to misrepresent the Constitution? Because it's open for interpretation.
You knew what it really said.
I mean, people call things unconstitutional all the time that have nothing to do with the Constitution.
Ken says, Trump's retreating from Syria here is simply his implementation of Putin's world strategy.
Yes.
Putin owns Trump. Trump is working for Russia.
Yeah, so, Putin is working on this. You know this. He's helping in this attack. He's helping Turkey.
Well, and I think it's a really interesting connection. If you look at Turkey's arms sales, if you think about even going back to we objected to Turkey's buying the Russian fighter jets because of the concern about our own air defense systems and proprietary information, this really does connect back to Russia and further Russia involvement in the Middle East. I think this is one of the things that we've got to put on the table. This will further destabilize the Middle East. It will have an increasingly militarized Turkey who is more closely aligned with Russia than us. Thank you, Donald Trump.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think that Trump understands this is something that Putin wants. What I'm not sure of is I don't believe that Trump understands the real ramifications of what he's doing and what has been done, because I think he is sort of missing that element of a heart that we all have that gives him the ability to have empathy and to understand the humanitarian crisis that he's creating.
Well, he's tweeted about this as if it's a very transactional. The Kurds received a great deal of money and things from us, so therefore it's okay to abandon them.
Right.
You know, as if this is just another business deal. I think that everything with him seems to be transactional. There doesn't seem to be a moral compass there.
Yeah.
You know, other than a financial compass.
I agree.
We get this letter from Christopher, who says, please stop scapegoating Trump's stupidity and incompetence by labeling it a mental illness. This only further stigmatizes those that have real mental health issues. This is a huge issue in our country right now, especially when it comes to Trump's actions and mass shootings. I think the listener has a point in that we certainly aren't qualified to make a diagnosis.
No one is.
I will say.
No one is.
Right.
He won't go to a real doctor.
But I will say that there certainly have been a number of mental health professionals, and there have been many, many books about this who have written and said they are greatly concerned for exactly what you mentioned.
Yeah. I think he has a real mental illness. Yeah.
That is not being treated or considered in this particular case.
I'm not using it as a metaphor for bad behavior. I think he has a real mental illness, and we are unable to cover it.
And I don't think it's scapegoating. I think it just tries to underline the horrible situation.
Well, it is, and part of it's our own bounded rationality of trying to figure out in this irrational world that we're now thrust into, trying to make sense of why this is happening. Because otherwise, you've got to go back and say that this man is truly evil, and that even bodes. I think that's a more scary future for us coming up to the elections.
And what does that say about the people that support
him? That's a
great point. What does that say about the people that support him? When you put labels on him like that, what does it say about the people that support him? It's just a question to ask.
They're duped. They're angry at the elite. There's a wonderful column in the New York Times today about a supposed dialogue between an urban guy and a flyover man. and the guy in the
flyover. That's the David Brooks column you're talking
did
about.
Did you read that?
Yeah, it's
so depressing to me because it basically, the flyover guy who was supposed to be saying, oh, you know, we were in vogue for a while, you're all reading Hillbilly Elegy, and now you've gone back in and you see us just simply as this concrete block that you call his base, and all you're concerned with is impeachment. So I didn't like him. I thought he was a jerk in 2016. Now I'm with him 100%. And he's got a real point.
Flyover Man is a made-up character, though.
Of course. Yeah, all of it. Yeah, it's not like a shift.
I don't want it to be, but I guess it is. Yeah.
But, you know, it is true. And again, I'll go back to the Democrats who, other than Nancy Pelosi, who I think is playing this right, just don't have it right. Why aren't there Democrats talking every day that GM strike? It's now a month old. People are starving. They don't have money. They're getting $250 a week to feed their families. And they believe this strongly enough that they're sticking with their union. Where are the Democrats?
Yeah. Well, there are many Democrats who have been on the picket line, right?
Who? I've not read about it.
Who?
Okay. I thought both Elizabeth Warren and I thought Kamala Harris was also on.
You could be right, Joe, but I mean I've been shocked that – I mean this should have been front page news. It should be running as a banner on all of the stations, and it's not. I mean turn on your favorite news station. It's not there.
Where's Biden, the working class man, the moderate, the person who could take over the mantle? Why is he not there? Because he's all bogged down with Hunter and the family and being maligned by the president.
Well, isn't this a little bit of the danger of impeachment, too? It overwhelms every other news story. I mean, there may very well be Democrats who are on those picket lines, but the news is so focused on impeachment that nothing else comes through.
It's still, though, Chris, I get your point.
Impeachment threatens to overwhelm what the presidential candidates are doing.
It still goes, though, to the Democrats' inability to answer Donald Trump message to message. He's dominating, as he has every minute since he entered this race. He's dominating the news cycles, and it continues. I mean, now we have war in Syria.
And I don't think it's just Donald Trump. It's the Republican Party has just been better at messaging. They've just been better for quite some time now. And Democrats, I agree, Rosemary. They continue to struggle with being able to develop a succinct message that really resonates with the American people.
No shortage of news to discuss this morning. We'll continue when we come back. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We have quite a few to get through when we return. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
That was the first time you led. Disappear into the sky, out of sight and out of mind.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo make up the group. We have a lot of letters, so we will start there and get through as many as we possibly can. William says the next step. If Speaker Pelosi is not just engaging in political theater, then she will begin impeachment proceedings today. Trump's letter constitutes obstruction. There is no point to continuing the impeachment inquiry. The House must decide to act.
Why? Why? Why can't the inquiry continue?
No, he's. I think
this person agrees with you.
She must act.
She must take a vote today on impeachment, I think. Is that?
Yeah, that's how I took it, and I'm saying, why? Why does she have to take the vote on impeachment now?
See, I read it as that she has to take a vote to formalize the inquiry,
I agree with that.
It is formal.
Pretty formal.
But it is formalized.
Formal.
I mean, this is the way they're doing it is completely formalized. They have the... It's their decision about how they want to proceed with this.
Right.
But it's not an act of the whole Congress.
They're saying
there
is no point to continuing the impeachment inquiry. The House must decide to act now. And so to your point is why.
What would that achieve?
Well, again, why? I mean, to me, and Terry and I have both said this, the longer you continue the questioning and the search for documents, the more you have a chance to persuade others that there's a lot here and you need to be on board with us.
And every rock they seem to kick over, there's a pile that needs to be cleaned up. And I think until you actually start to turn some rocks over where you're not finding more and more and more damaging or damning information, So I actually appreciate that they're being thorough about it. I kind of agree with Chris, though. At some point in time, I think the House needs to take a vote.
Do you remember the story of Br'er Rabbit? Oh, whatever you do, don't throw me in that thorn patch. And that's exactly what the Republicans are doing. Oh, we need a vote. We need a vote right now. No, we don't. Good for you. Stick with it. Stick with it, Nancy. I think she knows what she's doing.
You see, and
by the way, Chris, how many times have you heard in your life I sort of agree with Chris?
Until I don't.
That should be the name of my column.
I sort of agree.
Maybe. I don't know.
You kind of agree with Chris.
Well, yeah. The name of the game.
I've been talking
right...
to his kids. That's what they say. I sort of agree with that.
I think the name of the game right now is to find the evidence to support the claims so that they can build a solid case against this president.
Yes.
And that's what the investigation allows them to do. The investigation's point is not to try to make Donald Trump happy. It's not to try to make the Republicans comfortable. It's not to try to make sure that all the White House staff feels comfortable. That's not the point of this. The point of this is an investigation. And whether it has a vote or it doesn't have a vote, they're still getting good information, good evidence, good testimony, one way or the other, every day. And I think it's really helping their case.
John says, please consider the influence of the Ukrainian and Russian oil oligarchs, the Russian oligarchs, I believe, in Trump's move with Turkey and its outcome in Kurdish oil. I think we have we not?
No, but I think, again, I think it's important to continue to sort of connect some of these dots. So I appreciate the letter. And I do believe there's a connection there.
We go to Justin, who says, Bernie is a huge proponent of union rights and often proposes plans to strengthen unions, but it sounds like the panel is playing the don't say Sanders game today. The man has chained himself to a building fighting for equal housing and marched with Dr. King to fight for civil rights. He is unwavering in his honest support for America and not being bought. Give the man a chance. No one else has that record.
The man who should not be named. I think that's what Joe told us when we came in, right?
Whatever you do. I made you swear.
No, actually, we're supposed to discuss Bernie today.
Yes, it was on the docket. Sean, so that was...
We only talk about sick women candidates, not sick men candidates.
Really?
Yeah, I think there's a real, real terrible difference in the way Hillary was treated, and all she did was almost faint compared to Bernie.
So,
get out, Bernie. You're sick. You're a sick old man. Out of date. Get out.
I don't think
let the letters begin.
I don't think that was the response the letter writer was looking for, but thank you, Rosemary, for participating.
Aren't you happy we're talking about him now?
I'm sorry. Wait a second.
Much better.
Wait a second. Let me channel Alan for a second. Nonsense! That's for you, Alan.
Right. See, now the listener knows that I was protecting them.
Yes.
if you name Bernie, that's what happens. Rosemary just goes.
Rosemary has a point, though. I mean, the story we're going to discuss is Bernie kind of running a lower key campaign because of his health concerns.
Yeah,
and there is a point at which your campaign. You can't run a low-key campaign. And
well, first of
no,
all—
No, his point is that low-key for me is the same as all my opponents. Give me a break.
But now, first of all—
I don't know.
First of all.
Yes.
Joe takes control.
He had a tragedy in his family.
Yeah, that's really awful. He had a horrible week.
A really horrible week. So he has a heart attack.
Died.
His daughter-in-law dies, I think, the day he comes home.
A mother of three children, apparently
and
a remarkable person.
So,
it was awful.
You know, first of all, you know, just thoughts and prayers there. But as far as the low-key campaign, I mean, I think we can probably interpret it a bunch of different ways, but we're probably all kind of, I mean, there was a line in that article, and I have to bring it up, but there was a line in that article that stood out to me, which was something along the line of, and he didn't say this directly, but basically, like, we're going to see how it goes, like, to see how much he can do and how he feels in doing it. I don't know, in this political climate, I don't know that we believe anybody when they say anything like that, but it it makes sense, right? If you've had some sort of health crisis, you wait to see what your body will allow you to do.
I gave him credit for saying it because I am kind of surprised that he did. It was a level of honesty we actually don't see from candidates.
I agree.
And including Hillary Clinton, who refused to discuss her health issue, whatever it was the day that she fainted.
A bad move, and she paid a big price for it, so that's it. Yeah.
But, he could have run a slower campaign without saying anything, and maybe nobody would have noticed because maybe Bernie's slower campaign is still a much more active campaign than Biden's,
He said, we have to make sure that I have the strength to do what I have to do. I think we're going to change the nature of the campaign a bit. The comments stood in stark contrast to comments in recent days from his campaign advisors who have insisted that the Vermont senator was neither changing course nor easing his trademark intensity as a result of the heart attack. But to your larger point, Rosemary, he is continuing and obviously will still be campaigning and is still in the race.
Well, and his point was strongly made yesterday when that report came out. It's in the Post, I believe, saying that for the first time, the tax rate paid by billionaires in this country is lower than that paid by working class people. Horrible. Mm-hmm. So, I do not play down the accomplishment of Bernie Sanders. He has made income equality the issue for Democrats to deal with. But just as he was a hindrance to Democrats when he stayed in too long in 2016, I think he could be doing the same now.
Well, I don't think he's going anywhere. I don't think he's going to go anywhere. He may slow down, but the campaign is too well funded and too well organized for him to just.
But here's the problem. You've got look at the Democratic Party right now. The leading contender up until now and still at the top, Joe Biden, is seriously hurt by what Trump.
I think he's going away too.
Yeah, he's hurt by money. He's got money worries and he's got policy issues. He's not dealing with as well. And then Bernie, who's got serious health issues, which even he acknowledges voters have to look at. So until if they're still in the race, that does not allow another candidate to develop. And that is hurting the party and it's hurting the Democrats' chances to beat Trump. And when is anybody going to start thinking in the Democratic Party about the party?
I agree. I think the presidential race is going through a huge transition right now. And I agree with everything that Rosemary said. I think that Biden's time is quickly slipping away. I don't really think he's going to be able to recover from all the accusations that the Republicans and Trump have built up against him, even though they're all wrong. They're all
deeply
lies.
Wounded him, though.
He just can't compete with it.
If we can just tap the brakes a little bit, Biden and Bernie are still in the top three in the polls.
Right.
Biden is still winning in a lot of these polls. It's easy to say they should just get out of the race, but they're doing pretty well. Why should they get out before a single vote has been taken?
It's the 14th, so it's next week, right? It's the debate.
Yeah.
What's that going to be like?
It's going to be a zoo. There's 12 people on stage.
It's right.
That's more than we've even had before, and they were all zoos.
Yeah, it looks like a small festival. I continue to think.
Speaking
that,
of the O Positive Festival.
Yeah, it's the O Positive Festival.
It'll resemble the O Positive.
The O Positive might be a little more sober. I still think Biden is the best shot that the Democrats have to regain the White House. I also think that Biden benefits by Bernie staying in the race. I think that the Sanders-Warren wing of the party splits.
That's interesting, though, because a lot of polls, when they ask people who their second choice is, a lot of Bernie supporters will say Biden.
Yeah.
And maybe there's some sexism there, or maybe it's something else, but it doesn't seem to break.
Yeah, they voted for Trump last time
as
their second choice. Charming.
It doesn't seem to break as ideologically as people think it will.
Mm-hmm.
I just think the independents in those key swing states are hearing the negative attacks against Joe Biden right now, and I'm afraid that it's resonating, and I'm afraid his ability to fight back against it is not showing to be powerful enough. I'm concerned about that.
You may be right, and the Hunter Biden thing definitely is a weakness, but if you look at the head-to-head polls, Biden does better against Trump than any other candidate, for now at least.
The other problem, too, that I think this is a Trump problem is that you throw enough crap, you sort of get used to the smell. And I actually start to ignore a lot of the ridiculous tweets and unfortunately I think as a people we're probably becoming very calloused to these personal attacks and sort of looking at them going, okay, this is just more
more, you know, high school or grade school crap.
Sean writes and says, what President Trump is doing here is what he promised in his campaign. He's getting troops out of all of these war areas. The vast majority of the people of America want troops home. You seem to forget when you talk about it that the majority of people should run the country.
Oh, my goodness. That,
there's a point there. I mean, Trump did run on getting troops out of these areas, and Trump did run on endless, and kind of thwarting the foreign policy consensus. But there's also a right way to do things mm-hmm. and a wrong way to do things. You can work to reduce our influence in the Middle East without just abandoning allies, right?
Right.
You can have a thoughtful, deliberate process that allies, you talked about how the Kurds weren't warned, that allies have some warning of and that's predictable and everyone knows what's going to happen. Doing things, willy-nilly like this is not the right way to do it.
Well, and the concern is that, his foreign policy position actually creates so much destabilization that we probably are going to have to fight more wars in order to overcome what is being done right now.
I don't think any voter stood up for get out, get our boys out of Syria at the cost. And if we have to do a genocide for it, that's fine. No one thought that. And that's to your point, Chris.
There's a way
to do this.
There's a way to do it. But I do think there are voters who are sick and tired of this, who wonder why we're over there as much as we are. And I'm very sympathetic to that argument. But again, a good way to do it and a bad way. This is totally the wrong way.
Well, there's consequences to invading a country and getting yourself involved in a war, and there's consequences to pulling out of that once you've made that step. And I agree with Chris. I think doing this by tweet. I mean, this what's really happening is that the foreign policy. There is no foreign policy. It's Donald Trump waking up in the morning, picking up his phone, and tweeting out what he's decided he wants to do, and it's not connected to any long term strategy or even a short term strategy. Yep. And as we watch the smoke rise right now on TV in Syria, we see already what the ramifications are going
to
be.
I'd like to go back to when, troops were placed in countries that required a vote from Congress to do it, right?
Yeah.
So that our foreign policy wasn't just dictated by the whims of one person. If we're going to go to war, vote on it and do it the right way.
I don't disagree with that, but I also would advocate that if we can have troops in foreign countries and we can push the security of our borders further away from our borders, then I'm a huge proponent of that. And this is what worries me is that, it's the destabilization of an ally. It's the potential for a resurgence of ISIS, which ISIS is not dead, despite what Trump says. And if you give them the ability to create another enclave, there will be attacks here.
This removal of Congress from the act of war business was another of the very bad decisions made, and the people agreed to it in the aftermath of 9/11. That vote to give the president ability to act in a clear and present danger was almost unanimous. There was one black legislator, again, women, black women just are the smartest people in politics in this country, I'm convinced. Barbara Lee was the only person who voted against it. And she had a military background in her family. And now it's prescient because what you have now is that Congress has abdicated its responsibility.
When you have a bipartisan condemnation of the move in Syria, and it from members of Congress, I mean, and it raises the question of, well, why don't they, this is kind of the point you made earlier, why don't they take control of this? They have the power to do something, but absolutely this should not be up to the whims of one person because it's dangerous and it leads to situations where the president can make decisions that don't really reflect the will of the people.
Yeah, and the balance of powers is out of whack. The as I understand it and read the Constitution, the Congress should be the strongest of the three branches.
Right, they're not co-equal.
Yeah. And what we've done is that we have vested way too much authority in the executive branch and executive privilege, and Congress is going to have to claw that back. And if they don't claw it back, then we're going to see administration after administration as administration pushing the envelope of their own authority over the will of Congress, which frankly is more of our will. I would also note, going back to that letter, is that if you're going to talk about the majority of people, you don't want to go there, okay? Because again, he won in the Electoral College; he didn't win in the majority.
Not even close. Yeah, not even close.
All right, we have to
in there. Unfortunately, we have a lot to. We got a lot done, but thank you very much for being with us. Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo, thank you very much as always. We'll continue our program and continue the discussion after this short break.